today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
So what do you guys think is going to happen when Patrick hears this episode?
I don't know, but I'm sure not going to stick around to find out.
Have any more of the beer?
Yeah,
I'll have some more. All right, so it's Thursday. Kevin's gonna get me a beer. It's Rockin' the Suburbs, and we are talking about the 80s, and we're talking about bands who and artists who existed pre-80s and what they did to adapt to that very important musical time. I'm Jim Lenihan, and with me all this week are
Rob Gates,
Kevin Goff,
my bartender right now, thank you. Patrick Foster is out this week. And so we thought it was a great time to play a lot of power ballads and stuff like that. We talked yesterday about bands that really changed their sound going from the 70s to the 80s. And this time we're going to continue that theme, but focusing on artists who kind of always changed their sound in some way. And so the 80s presented another opportunity for that. But I wouldn't say it was necessarily like they took a specific hard left turn. And Rob, you wanted to start off with Paul Simon. What do you have to say about Paul Simon?
So Paul Simon really goes through three iterations of his career. There's Simon and Garfunkel,
right?
You know, which everybody knows from the 70s, Bridge Over Troubled Sounds of Silence, right. All that stuff.
Very, you know, folk duo,
right?
Sort of sound, right?
Him and Garfunkel split, and then he goes off and he has a successful solo career. He does Kodachrome,
right?
And he has some other songs in there. And then again, the way of most 70s artists, he sort of tails off. And then he comes back in the 80s with a whole new sound with Graceland, which has Going to Graceland and also has one of the songs that I think we're about to play.
A man walks down the street. He says, "Why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away my well-lit door. Mr. beer belly, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span
okay,
of
yeah,
attention.
There you go, you can call me Al.
Does feature one of Chevy Chase's better... And on-screen performances.
And it's comedic, too, besides being serious.
What's interesting about Paul Simon is he adapts his sound into the 80s, but it's still uniquely Paul Simon.
You know, absolutely.
He doesn't go power ballad. He doesn't go over the top with all the synths and all that stuff. Yeah. It's musical, and it's his voice for sure, and he's out front, which is, again, sort of keeps... It definitely keeps his own voice while continuing to adapt. Doesn't get... sucked into that 80s vortex of...
But kind of like we were talking about a couple of days ago with John Fogerty, this was completely unexpected that Paul Simon in 1986 would have a 5x platinum album. It just kind of came out of nowhere. As you mentioned, Rob, Paul Simon was a big, big artist, but it had been since 1975, he had Still Crazy After All These Years, which was a fantastic album. But after that, it's not that they didn't sell, but they didn't sell as well.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, this thing just became a powerhouse of a record. 86 was Graceland. Yeah.
And again, how much did the video, you know, lend to that? The video of You Can Call Me Al.
Probably.
Which was a very simple video.
But I think
quite entertaining.
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. But I think to his credit, like you said, he didn't try to like ride some trend or whatever. Who would think of putting South African vocal group behind you on these songs? And you hear it even more. You hear someone on that song, but you hear it even more on like Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes and The Boy in the Bubble, I Know What I Know, those songs. It's a really interesting, ambitious record and kind of came out of nowhere and and captured people's attention, and they love it. They still love it to this day. It's a really, I think, important record in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah.
But I will also say, I don't know that I would classify Paul Simon as an artist who like all of a sudden just changed his sound, because as you mentioned, there was an evolution that was already taking place. And the thing that impresses me a lot about Paul Simon is that post Simon and Garfunkel, he was always trying to do some interesting stuff and collaborating with musicians who would bring a new sound to him. So a classic example that would be, well, a couple of them would be Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard,
right? Yep.
Which has this really kind of exotic sort of beat to it, right? And then even more so, Late in the Evening, which I think, yes, is, you know, again, you can see him getting into world music already right there. In that case, more South American, but in this case, Graceland, more, you know, African. Yet in the 80s, he captured this thing at, I guess, just the right time, right? Another artist like that who was always evolving and changing his sound and found great success in the 80s. So, Rob, you had suggested that we play three songs to sort of show an evolution by this artist. So we'll start with the first one here.
Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars.
That was 1972, David Bowie. Now, song number two is 1980, David Bowie. All right, and here's 1983, David Bowie. First of all this does is make me think that I should just be doing a David Bowie podcast all the time. So those are great songs.
That would work. Yeah.
Yeah. We could spend 20 minutes on these songs alone.
Right.
But the evolution, Bowie is always evolving over time. And, you know, the evolutions did not take the pattern of whatever the music was of the day. And Let's Dance, which is a far away from Ziggy Stardust, but definitely demonstrates that. You know, everyone's going new wavy and, you know, all the keyboards and the synths, and that's much more. I was trying to think of...
He has castanets instead of synths.
Right.
I was trying to think of the genre in which you would place that, because it's not...
Timeless.
Yeah.
Timeless.
Right.
The middle song, Fashion, of course, which is interesting because it was sort of the last hard-driving guitar album that he did, which was the Scary Monsters album.
Right.
And there's a lot of great guitar work on there. Carlos Alomar carries a lead guitar on most of the songs, but Robert Fripp appears in Fashion, and he does all that really cool guitar stuff you hear there. And Mick Ronson did the guitar in Ziggy Stardust, and Stevie Ray Vaughan
played
guitar on Let's Dance.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
But the guitarist lends such... You know, Bowie chooses the guitarist and sort of adapts to their style throughout his albums. And like you said, you could do a whole podcast going through each Bowie period and the different musicians that he chose to, you know, perform the songs
right
during those periods.
No, so the funny thing about Bowie in the 80s isn't, like I said, so much that he just took some hard left turn, because he was always doing that and he was always reinventing himself. You know, he went through different characters, right? You had Ziggy Stardust and you had Aladdin Sane and you had Thin White Duke. Right, yeah. It's this. But the thing about the Let's Dance album is that he did hire Nile Rodgers to produce. And so some of that, you know, it has more rhythm to it maybe than some of his previous stuff. I mean, it's called Let's Dance. And one thing I want to say about Nile Rodgers' production, which is really just perfect, is unlike a lot of the other 80s production we've been talking about, Nile Rodgers, a disco guy, did not layer on a bunch of like slick...
Very sparse.
Know, right. Yeah. You know, he knew how to like make it work, make it really like, you know, pop out of the speakers, I think.
A very interesting point, and one that can actually be heard audibly quite well, are the two versions of Cat People.
Okay.
So there's the Cat People that was released on the Let's Dance album. But there is also the version, I don't know who produced it, was not Niles Rodgers, that was released for the movie, Cat People. Okay,
yep.
It's the same song, but with entirely different arrangements.
Okay.
I think you need a whole week of Bowie.
Yeah
we should. We'll do that. But one thing David Bowie did say, maybe similar to some of these other artists we're talking about, is just that he got better results, was he said, Nile Rodgers, I want a hit album. And they basically set out to create a hit record because he needed it at that point in his career. But in this case, I think they did it the right way. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, he didn't sell them or cash out. Yep, for sure.
No. Okay, one more on the evolving sounds. Let's hit play on this song. And you'll get a sense of where we're starting out. That's 1974 Genesis. This is 1981 Genesis. Here's 1986 Genesis. There's some Genesis Evolution. I'm so happy Patrick Foster is not here this week.
I was gonna
we would
say,
not
I
have been allowed to play this.
I could turn him into a Genesis fan with those first two songs.
The first two, yes.
Definitely not the third.
Not the third, right. And, agreed.
Yeah, you notice your air drumming tailed off significantly.
That is a given with Genesis for me.
I do like Abacab. I had that Abacab album when I was in high school and definitely rocked out to that a lot. Yeah.
Controversial statement, but I'm glad Peter Gabriel left the band.
Okay.
I'll state it that way because it's not because he wasn't good for that band, but it sprung off so many different things. Like Peter Gabriel, even his solo work, I think exceeds what he did in Genesis.
Agreed.
And Genesis exceeds what they did with Peter Gabriel in the band. So they're all friends, as I understand it or read about it. So that alone like leads me, like, it's fine that he left the band. I would love to see them do that again someday.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen.
So if you're listening, members of Genesis.
Yes. Come on, bring it back.
Did Peter or Phil Collins sing Lamb Lies Down?
That's Peter Gabriel. That was the last album he did with them. He actually announced on that tour that he was leaving the band. But they were performing the entire Lamb Lies Down beginning to end in the shows.
Because I invite the podcast audience to scroll back and listen again because it sure sounds a lot like Phil Collins.
It does. The vocals sound very similar, yeah.
And they went through several auditions and just realized that Phil Collins could fill the bill just as well. And when they came out with Nursery Crime shortly after Peter left, there was no rejection at all for the band. Like they felt like it was a good replacement and it worked out quite well for Genesis.
The funny thing about Peter Gabriel too is he's had his own evolution, musical evolution. Because I remember in the early days of MTV with like Shock the Monkey and that stuff, that he seemed to me to be the very, very like sort of alternative kind of artist, right? But then with So later on, he became a very mainstream pop artist in his own right.
And even with incorporating world type music into his music, just like Paul Simon from earlier.
Totally.
Definitely.
Though I think his stuff pre So and Shock the Monkey was much better.
Yep.
His solo stuff.
And I've seen Peter Gabriel and I've seen Genesis like independent. I would love to see them together.
Oh. Cool. So where do you come down on... So the Invisible Touch thing, I had to play this because by that point in the Genesis arc, they were completely just given over to Phil Collins because he had had so much success as a solo artist. I mean, by this point, I mean, he sold a lot of records as a solo artist, and especially with that No Jacket Required album and all that. So they basically were like, Phil...
Yeah, you write them.
Do your thing.
should have changed the name of the band to Exodus at that point.
If you look at Abacab, which is the song you played, In the Air Tonight, Phil Collins, same subject.
Is that right?
It's about the catching his wife cheating on him.
Okay. All right.
Go back and listen.
But the title Abacab has to do with actually the chords in the song. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, actually.
A-B-A-C-A-B. It's like there basically the chord progression.
That's probably because he couldn't come up with a good title, I guess.
But yet they wrote that into the song.
I'm going to go play that when I get home. I'm just going to play the chords and see if I can make it work out, ABC.
The only thing I will say, too, there's a bridge record in here that was actually just called Genesis.
Yeah.
The self-titled one.
Because that's all in Illegal Alien. And
right. I was about to say one of the worst songs ever is Illegal Alien. What? Illegal Alien.
Maybe offensive. Yeah. But not. It's actually a pretty good song. Catchy tune.
It's no fun.
It's no fun being an illegal alien.
Well, we know that today.
Yeah.
All right.
Appropriate.
Let's move on. We got one more to do. Tomorrow, we are going to just do sort of a catch-all. Some other bands from the 80s. You know, classic bands from the 80s that maybe didn't fit in any of these categories we talked about this week, but we want to touch on.
They have interesting stories.
Interesting stories. So we're going to get to that. All right. So let's get out of here. Please let us know what you think about the 80s. You can email rock@suburbspod.com. You can call
612-440-1984.
Or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. It's Rock of the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Rob Gates.
Kevin Goff.
Thanks so much for being here this week, guys. Keeping me company. The three bulls, as I like to call us.
It's been fun, yeah.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Yep. But if you listen to that Invisible Touch album,
yes,
I should have said this, but for you all, if you listen to that Invisible Touch, like those ones that were hits in the 80s, and you listen to the other songs on the album, they are still the long form Genesis.
Oh, you should have. Yeah, you definitely should have said that because
yeah,
The
Domino and Brazilian and
oh, that would have been good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll come back to this sometime
if you
want. Next time Patrick's out, we'll just do an all Genesis week.
Yeah. Right. I would love that. I could totally
all right.
do